Is the year actually 1727? This episode, we talk about a theory that claims approximately 300 years of fake phantom time were added to the early Middle Ages in a conspiracy involving prominent religious and political rulers.
We will outline the claims of a historical revisionist professor, discuss the theories of the invented Middle Ages, and go through the alleged evidence claiming that 300 years of history was fabricated. So, the next time you're late for something, you can just say you're actually 300 years ahead of time.
This episode is for anyone looking for an extremely thought-provoking ride down a wild rabbit hole of revisionist history from the internet.
I'm your co-host, Izzo, also joined by Magnum.
And this is the Swerve Podcast. Welcome back, everyone, to another week of the Swerve Podcast. We got an excellent episode in store today. Hope everyone's doing well and is ready to listen to some crazy information. Today's topic is quite out there, but before we get into that, if you're a first-time listener and you're wondering what you've stumbled across, we're the Swerve Podcast, and we do deep research on topics that swerve off the mainstream path, then talk about them in a way that's not boring. Here, we like to prioritize listener-requested topics, usually topics that we know little to nothing about, doing the extensive deep-dive research so that you don't have to, all in line with our overall mission to understand everything in the universe, one obscure topic at a time. Typically, we cover fun conspiracy stuff, fringe or cutting-edge science, forgotten or alternative history, strange myths and urban legends, consciousness, UFOs, true crime, the paranormal, or unexplained mysteries, and attempt to deliver them in an entertaining and uncensored manner. But before we get into the basics of today's topic, Izzo, would you enlighten the listeners to our special tradition on the podcast?
Of course, the tradition is that we like to drink while we record these episodes. So we'll take listener-recommended drinks, make classic cocktails, or just keep it basic sometimes and then just share what we're drinking. So you can join along if you want. So I'll start us off here. So I have an eggnog espresso martini.
That's a great one. Can't go wrong with the eggnog.
And the eggnog is like this old Tom's version, so it is already liquored up for me, so I don't have to add it myself.
Excellent. Now, I have a throwback to an excellent drink. It's called the Dirty Butter White Russian. We'll have the drink recipes posted on our Instagram page if you're curious what the drinks look like and you want to get, you know, you want to drink along with some of these dank fucking cocktails we're coming up with here. But this is a great one. I had it before on the podcast. I'm going to do it on this one. Seems to fit what we're doing in a way, not really, but I don't know. We're talking about history, it has the word Russia in it.
Yeah.
Russia's part of history, I guess.
Yeah. I was kind of along the same lines, like this phantom time. It's been a little while since Christmas, but still, you know, you got some eggnog in there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, what is time? We're 300 years behind schedule, apparently, so who gives a shit? All right, let's hop into the basics of today's episode. So first and foremost, this was a recommendation from one of our loyal listeners on Patreon. Shout out to you, Dirty Dangles, for today's topic recommendation. This is going to be a wild ride. This is going to be some historical revisionism that is alleged, and we'll go through it and we'll see what listeners think, if they believe this, if they don't believe it. But today we're talking about the phantom time hypothesis, and this claims that approximately 300 years of fake or phantom time have been added to the early Middle Ages. And this was like a conspiracy that involved at the time some of the prominent religious and political figures of this piece of time. For those who aren't familiar with the word historical revisionism, this isn't like a pseudo, it's not the same as like pseudoscience. This just refers to a reinterpretation of orthodox views on evidence, motivations, and decision-making processes surrounding an historical event. So I don't know, Izzo, if you were looking at this topic, one thing that I come across is when you see the word historical revisionism, it sometimes implies that this is like some fake shit. But my reading of it is historical revisionism, yes, it can be some crazy fake random shit, but it can also have like actual historical rigor applied to it, where things get changed based on new findings or different historical documents being revealed, things like this.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do like the idea that you have these random pieces of evidence throughout history, and then it's like up to the interpreter to kind of create this story. And that's essentially what happens. Not everyone is going to have the same story. So if you can find some pieces that kind of fit with this alternative theory or alternative line, timeline of events, then you have a story there. You have something that makes people think. And oftentimes, like, that's the truth lies somewhere in between all of these stories, potentially.
Yeah, that's so I just wanted to make that point off the bat. I'm not saying that I agree with the conclusions of this, and we'll save that for final thoughts, but I want to make that point. This phantom time hypothesis, there's actually two main sources that I found that this theory originates from. The first is in 1991, where the phantom time hypothesis was first described by a German historian named Herbert Illig. And he alleges that this is the ultimate forgery, historically. He published at least two German language books, the first being The Invented Middle Ages, and the second, Who Has Tampered with the Clock? How 300 Years of the Middle Ages Were Invented. What's crazy about this whole theory, it's very hard to find the original texts online because they're in German. So you have to go off a lot of, in every case, a secondary piece. Does that make sense? It's not the primary document I can refer to because I can't read the German. So I have to read what people wrote about it. And I couldn't even find a translated version.
Okay, I see.
So there's already a little bit. So I don't know. Maybe he's alleging something completely. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know. I have to go off these sources. So I want to make that clear with this Herbert Illig guy. Maybe he doesn't believe this, but this is what we have to work with. The second source that this comes from, it's kind of influenced by Herbert Illig. This is 1995. This guy, Dr. Hans Ulrich Nemitz, he wrote, Did the Early Middle Ages Really Exist? This was his white paper, and he further kind of spread the idea that 300 years of time were fabricated. So I have a quote from the abstract of this Dr. Hans Ulrich Nemitz, this paper that he wrote. This is what it said, quote,
This question in itself, and more so the answer, no, the early ages did not exist. It's surprising to say the least. It contradicts all basic knowledge and attacks the historian's self-respect to such an extreme that the reader of the paper is asked to be patient, benevolent, and open to radically new ideas. I shall argue step by step, and I hope you will follow.
End quote. So he is basically saying, he's like, yeah, I got some crazy shit. You know, I got some crazy shit, but read my arguments. Make your own opinion. I'm not crazy. No. That's what he's saying. But we'll see. The phantom time hypothesis alleges that a conspiracy involving the emperor and the church was coordinated to fabricate the Anno Domini dating system retroactively. Now, interesting, Anno Domini, do you know what that means? It's just AD. So the AD that we use, that's what that refers to. It's Anno Domini. Specifically, the Holy Roman Emperor Otto III, as well as Pope Sylvester II and the Byzantine Emperor Constantine VII, were the culprits involved, allegedly, according to these two folks that wrote these invented Middle Ages things. Now, if this phantom time hypothesis is true, it alleges that the years 614 to 911 AD are fake phantom time. I don't know. Interesting. Connecting the dots. Is there some kind of 9/11 connection there? Maybe we'll save that. Here's the thing. Tampering with the dating system would place the present year closer to the special year of 1000 AD, which would better legitimize Otto's claim to the Holy Roman Empire, right? It's kind of dope if, like, when you're the Roman Empire, you're the first emperor of the new millennium. Like, it's just like, it's kind of sick. It's like a flex. But the problem is, if you're not, like, that's still 300 years away. It's like you just got to fake 300 years so that you're in the new millennium. Right? So this is like this is where this idea comes from. Herbert Illig, this German guy, the 1991 stuff, he believes that the revision was achieved by the alteration, misrepresentation, and forgery of documentary and physical evidence. And we're going to go through some of this as we get more through the episode. If this is true, if this phantom time hypothesis is indeed really what happened, the entire Carolingian period, including King Charlemagne, is a fabrication. So specifically, the Carolingian Empire from 1800 to 887 AD was a Frankish-dominated empire in Western and Central Europe during the early Middle Ages. And the Carolingian Empire was ruled by the Carolingian dynasty, which had ruled as kings of the Franks since 751 and as kings as the Lombards in Italy from 774. So in 800, the Frankish king Charlemagne was crowned emperor in Rome by Pope Leo III in an effort to transfer the Roman Empire from the Byzantine Empire to Western Europe. The phantom time hypothesis, though, simply claims that all of this is propaganda to support the calendar change. The Carolingian period, this is something I wasn't familiar with before this episode, but King Charlemagne, like everybody's kind of learned about that, I think.
I don't know.
No, you don't remember Charlemagne? Okay. No. Fair enough.
Charlemagne, the god only.
The podcaster, yeah, okay. No, this is this is a king, but he doesn't exist apparently. So, and maybe Charlemagne the podcaster doesn't exist either.
Oh.
Interesting. I don't know. So that's the basics of this. So let's talk about the invented Middle Ages and some of the other claims associated with the phantom time hypothesis. Let's break this down. So the chief claims. The first is that 297 years of the Middle Ages did not take place. This is kind of the main thesis of this entire idea. So specifically from September 614 until August 911, this is just an invention and time forgery of Otto III. That's what this claims. Otto III reigned from 983 AD as king of the Germans and from 996 AD to 1002, according to this is like the fabricated history. That's the claim.
Okay, I see.
If the phantom hypothesis is true, Otto III would have been ruling in the 7th century. Therefore, as we alluded to in the basics, the motive for the time forgery is alleged to have occurred so that Otto III would be the first millennium emperor. I don't know. It's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. My only thing is, like, if he all of a sudden made it okay to forge time and he became, like, the first emperor of the millennium, well, then the next person that takes over after him, he could be like, you know what? Let's just erase all of that. Now I'm the first emperor of the millennium. And then it just keeps going like that. We're still in the first millennium, if you don't know.
But whoever was next wasn't as sick as a fuck as Otto III. This guy was sick. He's sick. Izzo, that's what you're not understanding.
All right. provided like a prosperous time for everyone.
Yeah, no, it's yeah. Hey, you know what? We're all a part of the second millennium. That's pretty dope. Most people wouldn't be. But if the time's fake, then we're just some random point in history. It's like not even cool. Right? Like what? We were a part of what? The transition to the 1700s or some shit or whatever. I don't even know what the math is there, but
yeah,
like who gives a fuck, right? That's not cool.
Yeah.
It's fucking lame.
I mean, generations like from now, movies.
No.
generations from now, generations from now, they can experience Y2K again.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
If we are in the phantom time.
So this is kind of a big deal religiously. So this would be essentially like, right, if we're talking about this time and the culture of the time, you would basically be Jesus Christ's representative on earth at the dawn of the 7th millennium, right? Because if the Bible says the earth is 6,000 years after creation, so you would be the 1000 AD. So it's kind of like that'd be the 7th millennium. It'd be kind of cool. So that's the motive. Like, this is me explaining the motive here. Number two, one of the chief claims. This is alleged wrong time added to the Gregorian calendar during the transition to the Julian calendar. So we have to linger on this point for a while, because we have to understand the Gregorian calendar. We have to understand the Julian calendar to understand what that professor and that Urabit Ele guy are saying and why they think there was some fuckery going on.
Okay.
The AD BC calendar that we use today is called the Gregorian calendar. And this is based on the year of the birth of Jesus Christ. AD counting years from the start of this epoch and BC denote years before the start of the era. And I think we all understand that. So like BC is like
before Christ.
Yeah. And then AD, commonly people call it after death, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not actually that. It's the Anno Domini is what it stands for. Okay. So they are actually separate. And we'll talk a little bit more about this in a second here. Because here you go. Fun fact, you know there's no year zero. Did you know that?
Well, yeah. I didn't know that, but it kind of makes sense.
There's no year zero. So the year 1 AD immediately follows the year 1 BC. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a little bit of phantom time, a little bit. It's like we could have had, we've lost a year.
Yeah.
Because we should have just used zero, but we didn't.
Yeah, but zero becomes hard, year zero.
So I'm proposing a new phantom time theory on the Swerve podcast today. We should have had a year zero. I don't know why the fuck there's not a year zero, right? If BC is negative and AD is positive, you should have a zero.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about the Gregorian calendar. This went into effect in October 1582 AD, and this was introduced as a modification of and replacement for the Julian calendar. So the calendar we've been using has only been around, what do you say, like less than 500 years. Before it was the Julian calendar. Now, the Julian calendar came into existence to kind of standardize time, because you had at the time this massive expanding Roman Empire, and basically everyone is using different calendars. Some of the calendars are based on seasons, others are based on the sun, others are just arbitrary. So there wasn't an easy way to coordinate trade and commerce. So the Julian calendar was introduced to be like, this is the fucking calendar we're using. And now we can have better trade. We can have a better economy and commerce, because if you're saying you're going to be here on the 7th, you're going to be here on the 7th.
Yeah. Can't leave them hanging for like a year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So the Julian calendar is based on the solar year. This is one Earth orbit around the sun, but interestingly, it uses, and this is important to remember, it uses 365.25 days with leap years. Okay? So this kind of makes sense. Like even when I think about the calendar, this makes sense, because a leap year is every 4 years. So that accounts for the 0.25 for the 365. But there's a problem with the Julian calendar. A solar year, more specifically, is 365.24219 days. So it's like slightly less than 365.25. So specifically, it's about an 11-minute difference.
Ah, who cares?
Well, this is why we went off the Julian calendar. Because it does matter.
For 11 minutes?
11 minutes. It fucking matters. It fucking matters.
Only in the bedroom does it matter.
that's dude, 11 minutes. That's a long, dude. That's, what are you talking about? That's great.
But yeah, that's where the minutes matter. Not in a day.
Yeah, but you don't need 11 of them. maybe 4 minutes. Like 11 minutes. It was fucking for 11 minutes. What are we talking about? Jesus
Christ.
Phantom
time. Just going to start adding phantom minutes to everything.
Yeah, it's like, no, this is a solid 58 minutes. It's like, this was 3 minutes. That's phantom minutes. What are you talking about? That's awesome. I love that so much. That's such a good, I'm definitely using that forever. It's phantom time.
You have some issues with it. Bring it up to Julius Caesar.
Yeah, don't complain to me. Complain to Urbit Ailig.
Yeah.
I don't make the calendar. So anyways, this 11 minutes, it actually does matter because what happens is you lose one day every 128 years. So over 1500 years, you start losing a lot of days. And the problem with this is the church really likes when Easter lands on the spring equinox. Remember, so we talked about equinoxes and solstices in the Georgia Guidestones, actually. So the equinox, when the length of day and night is the same, this is supposed to occur on March 21st. But due to this slippage, it was not occurring on March 21st. It was occurring on March 11th.
Hmm.
So this is a problem. They want it on the spring equinox, but because they're not using the correct time of a solar year, things aren't making sense, like,
yeah,
from that perspective.
Well, I mean, I hate to break it to them, but Easter doesn't occur on the 21st of March every year right now.
Yeah, but we're a secularized culture. We're not encoded. Like, we're talking, this is like church and state times. Like, this is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Also, daylight savings time.
Oh, don't even get me started on daylight savings time. So fucking stupid. So fucking
but
stupid.
But it's there.
I know.
It's phantom time.
It's so bullshit. I don't even know where to begin on daylight savings time. Let's not digress.
Okay.
Because I have a whole rant. I love talking about it when it comes up, but I will digress to stay on topic. This pissed, like, Pope Gregory the 14th, he was pissed. He's like, we can't 13th. Have this. The 13th. He's not having this. He doesn't like that Easter is not landing when it should be landing. So he decides to switch things up. So hence, the Gregorian calendar comes in 1582, right?
He likes to expect the Easter bunny.
Yeah. He's
at
like,
the same time every year.
I find eggs on the 21st. So
steps outside on March 11th, steps on an egg. He's like, what the fuck? That motherfucker came early.
Yeah.
Just like me.
Yeah. The Gregorian, this is hence the name, the Gregorian calendar, because it's Pope Gregory. So this comes into place, and this is crazy. Like, I can't imagine being around it. Like, I fucking hate daylight savings time. And this is what these are what the peasants and the serfs at the time have to put up with. On Thursday, October the 5th, 10 days are added to the nominal date to synchronize the calendars with astronomic events. The next day then became the 15th of October.
Damn. So better have that rent money.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. So you just lose 10 days. Like, you don't lose 1 hour and, like, you, like, wake up and you're pissed off and tired. You lose 10 fucking days. Yeah, no kidding. So basically, they've added 10 lost days to the calendar, and we still use this time today. We're on the Gregorian calendar. I said all of what I've just said. This is what has happened. Okay? That's not conspiracy. This is what occurred. Now I'm going to talk about the phantom time stuff. So based on a real solar year calendar, there should actually have been a discrepancy of 13 lost years, or 13 lost days, not 10, between the Julian calendar and the real solar year calendar, like the Gregorian calendar. It shouldn't be 10 days. It should be 13 lost days, right?
Yeah.
So basically, the Pope and astronomers and mathematicians involved, this is what Dr. Hans Ulrich Nimitz and Urbit Ailig are proposing. They're like, well, either these astronomers, popes, and mathematicians, they just made an error, or they were intentionally covering up a conspiracy that happened centuries earlier.
Okay, this is where we get
into it. This is where we get into it. So the revision, which gave birth to the Gregorian calendar, strangely, it only used the error that had been built up since the calendar of the year 325 AD.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like they're missing 300 years of time, so that would have given you roughly your 13 days of lost time. just a note on this. You get this 325 by calculating the amount of time that would need to pass to produce an error of 10 days. So the amount of time that would need to pass to produce an error of 10 days is 1,257 years, right? If you take the 11 minute slippage, remember we were saying you lose about a day every 128 days. To lose 10 days, it would be 1,257 years is the calculation. Okay. So if you subtract that from 1582, the year that the Gregorian calendar was introduced, you get 325. So this is weird because, one, Caesar was dead, like the Julian calendar is Julius Caesar, was dead for more than 300 years at this time. So how could he have introduced a calendar in 325 if he was dead in 44 BC? This is what the phantom hypothesis proponents are raising. They're like, there's a discrepancy here. So it's more like 16 centuries had passed since Caesar's introduction of the calendar. And this is where those 13 lost days come from instead of the 10 lost days.
Okay.
So, I mean, we don't really need to understand it. That's basically what they're saying. They're like, they're saying it's 10, but if you really do the math, it's 13. So why is it why did they use 10 then? Did they make an error or was this deliberate? That's the idea.
Okay.
So I have a note here. Pope Gregory, he actually employed a large staff of scientists, of which included Johannes Kepler. So like they have very smart people. And basically this staff, they anchored the calendar revision on the observation of the vernal equinox on the 21st of March at the Nicene Church Council of 325. This is going to get kind of crazy for a second. This is the response to answer the question, why 325? Apparently there was a council and they're like, we're just going to count from 325. And like they knew it. Like they're like, yes, we know. This is what we're doing. Okay. So the contradiction that is proposed by the phantom time hypothesis proponents, there is an answer for it because this council just settled. They're like, to determine the date of Easter, we're just going to start from 325. And they called this computus. That was when they did all these calculations. Does that make sense what I'm saying? So like there is an answer to the question why there's a discrepancy.
Just because they wanted to.
Yeah, they just decided that's when they were going to do it. And there's a record of this, the Nicene Church Council.
Okay.
Now we're going to go back into the phantom time hypothesis world. According to Herbert Elig, there's no evidence that this council actually did this. So he's like, mainstream historians, yes, they say there is this council and that can explain the discrepancy, but he's like, there's no evidence that this exists. So he therefore concludes, like he refutes the refutation.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so he refutes the refutation and he claims that he's like, there's a time period between Pope Gregory the 13th and Julius Caesar that seems to be roughly 300 years shorter than originally thought. So this is why Herbert Elig believes that 297 years of fictitious history were inserted by the Vatican.
Motherfuckers.
Yes. So the claim here then is that there's no proof of anything between 614 and 911 AD. That's the claim.
Okay. But is there proof?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Let's talk about some of the evidence that the invented Middle Age proponents bring up. Before we continue the episode, if you're enjoying our podcast, the people you hang out with probably will too. Do us a solid and please pass on this episode to your social media friends on Instagram, X, or other platforms. We would definitely appreciate your support. I'd also like to take this time to shout out some of our valued listeners. Shout out to the Metaphysical Man in Black for the very nice message you sent to us. Shout out to Dirt Metal Ranch, Hang_M_High, Vicious Pink, Juicy James 562, Jess Shelley 221, and Miss Shelney for liking our stuff on Instagram and engaging. Lastly, shout out to our newest Patreons. Shout out to Scott coming in at that Ride the Wave tier. Also, massive epic shout out to Andrew Johnson for upgrading to our producer tier. We appreciate the fucking shit out of you. To everyone else, please feel free to submit your topic or drink recommendations at theswervepodcast.com. May good karma and vibes with all of you. Back to the show. first is a scarcity of archaeological evidence that can be reliably dated to the period of 614 to 911 AD. Keyword there is reliably dated. Some people think the dating mechanisms are reliable. They argue that they are not reliable. That's like a very key point. So because of this, there's gaps in the archaeological and written and technology records of history. So there's gaps in time for ceramics evolution, gaps in time for town continuity, gaps in the history of building in Constantinople, the word of the podcast that neither of us can ever fucking say. Izzo, I'll leave it to you. What's the word of the podcast?
Constantinople.
Yeah, Constantinople. Word of the podcast. There's a gap in the doctrine of faith, especially the gap in the evolution of theory and meaning of purgatory. So like between 16 AD and like 1100, I guess there's a gap there. There's a 300-year-long reluctant introduction of farming techniques. So the three-acre system, the horse with cummet, and the war of techniques, the stirrup. There's just like, I guess, a lack, 300-year lack of like progress there. I don't know what a horse, what's a cummet? Am I saying that right?
I don't know.
A cummet? Cummet?
Yeah, cummet. I would say cummet.
What are we talking about?
Constantinople.
Constantine's apple. There's a lack of written history that's alleged as well. It claims that the Roman Empire had a detailed record until 1610, and then basically written history vanished for 300 years. And then there's also like castle evidence that they claim. So Illig found many castles built up to the year 600 and many after the year 1000. He also claimed to find a document that said 1,700 structures were built in this time period, but when he went to go trace the structures, 97% of them were not there.
Hmm.
So he's like, okay, there's some castle evidence. There's also claims of lack of burial grounds, remains of villages, artifacts in this time period as well, apparently, allegedly.
See, that one, I kind of like that one. Just like if you had thousands, millions of people around, where are the bodies?
Yeah, exactly. And where are the castles?
Yeah. Castles and bodies. That's all we care about.
Show me the body. Yeah. Where's the horse of Kummet?
The horse cometh here.
Yeah.
The horse cometh there. What is a Kummet? I don't know.
I don't know. It sounds dirty. I don't like it. It sounds like a donkey show. Like, they didn't even have donkey shows in the early Middle Ages? Like, so anyways, that's one of the claims. It's just that there's these gaps and there's a scarcity of archaeological evidence. That's one of the claims. I'm not saying that's can be uncontested. That is just the claim that these papers are making. The second claim, this goes to the reliability of the dating mechanisms. So the dating methods used for these periods, they use radiometry and dendrochronology. And they claim that both of these methods are inaccurate. So radiocarbon dating, this relies on the fact that carbon-14, which is a radioactive form of carbon, this form, it exists in all organic matter, but in small amounts. So what's interesting, carbon-14 is steadily produced by cosmic radiation in our atmosphere, and plants will absorb this radioactive carbon, this form of radioactive carbon. And then when animals eat plants, this radioactive carbon goes up the food chain and it kind of enters organic matter. Like, this is how it gets into, you know, any organic matter.
Okay.
So what happens is when an organism dies, it stops consuming, right? It stops eating. So which causes it to stop taking in more carbon-14. So since we know how long it takes for carbon-14 to decay into other elements, you can then test the amount of it in dead organic matter. And you can come up with a precise date of when the organic matter died. That's how the carbon-14 dating works. So this is the radiometry strategy used to date things. And some allege that they're like, oh, it's just not accurate. And I didn't really understand the argument there. Because I was like, this sounds pretty accurate. Like, I'm like, that's a pretty great method for dating things. It just sounds like it, you know. Maybe I don't understand the technicalities and the instruments used to measure. Maybe there's some deficiencies there, but I'm like, this is pretty smart. That's a good idea. They're like, no, it's not. Okay.
Well, maybe like if it is present in all matter and you die and then you get buried, the soil takes over type of thing. Like the soil itself will have some carbon 14.
Yeah, like confounding factors and stuff like this.
Maybe that. But even then, like if you're pretty specific with the sample that you have, that it's just from, like oftentimes it's like a fossil, like a bone. So inside the bone, you're not going to find soil. So it's just specifically from the bone.
Yeah. Next one, dendrochronology. This could also be the word of the podcast. Dendrochronology. Have you heard of this before?
No, I haven't, but we pronounced it better, so.
So this is known as tree ring dating. This uses, so it's literally like, you know how older trees have more rings?
Yeah.
You use this fact to measure pieces of wood, and then you put them on a standardized curve of carbon 14 dating methods, and you try to figure out how old the wood is for like ships, castles, doors from villages, things like this.
Okay.
Basically, trees of a certain species, they'll grow at like more or less the same rate, and each year of growth leaves a mark within the trunk of, again, like, you know, obviously the rings, the new layer of growth. So these rings kind of create this scientific record of years, and trees of the same species from the same region can be compared with each other to kind of create this record. So you're basically, you're recovering wood from historical sites, and then you're anchoring it to like a radiocarbon dating system. And then you're creating a chronology of samples from time. I think that makes sense. But we should say it really does rely, like you do need that radiocarbon dating. So if there is issues with that method, you would have issues with this one too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're alleging. They're like, this isn't good. I will say when I was reading his paper, he had a little bit of a better explanation here. He said that there's inherent errors with the methodologies that are being used. And for the dendrochronology, he said that there was a lack of wood samples. He said you would usually want about 50 samples to have a good, you know, like homing in on the time something's from.
Yeah.
But from 300, and this is me looking at the graph that was provided in the paper, from 300 AD to 720 AD, there's only 4 wood samples.
Hmm.
So like that's all the archaeological things could find between that date. There was 4 samples. So under 50, obviously. And in general, when I was looking at this graph, there was about from 300 AD to 800 AD, in general, every year that they had wood samples from, there was less than 50. My point being, when I was reading what he was saying about this method, he did have a point about the wood samples.
Yeah. Just the lack of wood.
Yeah, there's, yeah. You know, at that age, it's, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? If we were sponsored by Blue Chew, that would be a perfect time to bring that up.
Yeah.
Those are two things. So we said the lack of archaeological evidence, you get these gaps. And then the other criticism is that the methods used for dating there's inherent problems with them. And then the third thing, criticism to why the phantom time hypothesis, no, sorry, not criticism, evidence that the phantom time hypothesis is true is that medieval historians rely too much on written sources. So these proponents of the phantom time hypothesis, they cite that there are issues with falsification of many documents throughout the Middle Ages. So like, how can you prove that this is true or this is a fabrication?
Yeah.
And there's merit to that, right? Like, people leave behind records all the time. It doesn't mean it's true. Like a journal, a story, like.
Yeah, I mean, we had that one episode with the UFO diary entry. It was just completely made up. What didn't occur at that
exactly,
time.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. The fourth piece of evidence is the presence of Romanesque architecture in the 10th century Western Europe and lack of scientific advancement. So basically what they're saying is architecture of 476 AD was similar to the architecture in the year 1000. So what they're claiming is, like, for 500 years, the architecture is the same. It suggests there's a lack of development and progress in the time period. Isn't that strange? Or is it just there's no time there, and that's why it's the same? So they argue that, like, aqueducts and other technologies at the time, they're, like, the same for that period of time. And, again, that would make sense if 300 years was faked. That's their claim.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So those are, like, the four kind of pillars of evidence the phantom time hypothesis attaches itself to. Coming out of this, just some we said it in the basics. They claim that Charlemagne is just a propaganda claim. So one of the pieces, this is another, like, maybe weak piece of evidence. They're like, Charlemagne's just too good to be true. He was at war for 44 of his 46-year reign. He had time to be an astronomer, an agriculturalist, an architect, to create a jury system, to reform education, and even update scripture. But he was at war for 44 of the 46 years of reign. They're like, this sounds fake. This sounds fugazi. This guy's too good. And they claim that Otto III would be legitimized by a story like Charlemagne. So they're like, it's just like a propaganda thing. It's like, look how good, like, our people before me were, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, one final thing on this whole period. This Herbert Elig guy, he actually continued to publish on the phantom time hypothesis until 2013. So, like, he wrote in 1991 that thing. And then 1995, you have Dr. Hans Ulrich Nimitz write his piece. But this guy kept writing about this allegedly until 2013. That's what I could find, with the caveat that it's German and I don't fucking know. What I wanted to talk about next is, can we talk a little bit about who Herbert Elig is? Can we gain any evidence, or not evidence, just a better context for the phantom time hypothesis if we look into the man actually hypothesizing the hypothesis?
Yeah, let's look into this schnitzel.
So, yeah, whip out your schnitzel. He was born 1947 in Wunstrasse, Bavaria, Germany. He was active in an association dedicated to Emanuel Velikovsky called the Society for the Reconstruction of Human and Natural History. So let's talk a little bit about Emanuel Velikovsky, right? So this is the association he's a part of that's dedicated to this guy. Velikovsky was a Russian-American psychoanalyst, writer, and catastrophist. He authored books that argued Earth suffered catastrophic close contact with other planets. Specifically, he talked about Venus and Mars in ancient history. So he was heavily criticized for these positions. So the point I'm trying to make here, the society or the association that Herbert Elig was a part of was dedicated to a man who already had, like, very grandiose claims.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, 1989 to 1994, Herbert Elig was also the editor of a journal called Past, Early, Present. And in 1995 to present day, as far as I can understand or find, he worked as a publisher and author under his own publishing company, Mantis Verlag, and published his own journal, Leaps in Time. It's always interesting when someone has their own publishing company, because it's like, you just publish whatever the fuck you want, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And your own journal, like, it's okay. You don't have to, like, hold yourself to peer review, criticism.
Yeah, just got to get it out there.
Or you can, but, like, they're all part of your society, like the Society for Reconstruction of Human and Natural History. So, like, of course, they'll peer review it, but they're going to agree with you.
Yeah.
Herbert Elig, he published proposals for revised history. This is another thing he did. This is, like, before he talked about the phantom time hypothesis, he had proposals about revisionist history towards ancient Egypt. And he proposed, he had proposals that received coverage, actually, in the German popular media in the 1990s. So, like, my point is, He's been deconstructing official history for some time.
Yeah, his whole life.
Yeah, pretty much. In 2013, he published on art history, the German Renaissance master Anton Pilgrim. So this Anton Pilgrim was someone, and he proposes that revisions to conventional chronology and argues for the abolition of the art historical category mannerism. So even present day, I think he's just like, this is what he does. He likes breaking history down and like saying things like this. So it just
refuting it, revising it.
Yeah. It seems like a trend. So this kind of puts a context into like why, I don't know. What's the word? It's like, you have like your conclusion drawn before you even seek to find evidence kind of thing. It's like you're only looking at the evidence to support your claim. That was my read on this whole context thing.
Yeah, you can definitely see how somebody would think that.
So let's get into the rebuttals against the phantom time hypothesis and see what some other lines of evidence that would suggest this is not true, that the 300 years do exist. I put this one first because this is like, this is the most convincing that this is incorrect.
Okay.
It's just ancient astronomy. So, and the reason this is great is because astronomy is like highly deterministic. It's the nature of motions, the motion of stars and planets. So like you can calculate time from different calendars using astronomy like very accurately because it's deterministic, it's mathematical, it's physics. Mm-hmm. So even if you have different calendars describing different events, if they have reference to like stars, you can use the stars as like a calibration for the calendars. Yeah. And this includes the Gregorian. And when you calibrate these historical dates relative to the present, it kind of just like breaks down the whole thing. So I had some examples that I found. Ancient celestial observation do agree with the usual chronology and not with Illig's. And some examples of this is a confirmed eclipse by Pliny the Elder in 59 AD. That eclipse, like I said, it's deterministic. So you can do the calculations of when that eclipse occurred, and it does occur when they described it occurred.
Yeah.
The observations of, there's another one, the Tang Dynasty in China and Halley's Comet, they're also consistent with current astronomy and no phantom time being added. A further piece of evidence is the Mayan calendar. This is also based on astronomical events, and you can translate the dates from the calendar to dates in any other calendar to the exact day. So
up to 2012.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, up to 2012. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. So there's several solar eclipse records in ancient Mesopotamia and in the second millennium BC. So like those line up. And we know exactly how much time has passed between those events and the modern age. And there is not a gap of missing time proposed by the phantom time hypothesis.
Hmm.
And these are just some examples. Like there's others. There's many of these examples. So when you use astronomy as your calibration, it's this. There's no 300 years missing, is the point.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Just by like talking about it, I don't know the math behind it, but if Pliny said there was an eclipse and then they can like date it back to that, I'm all for it.
Yeah. So to me, that's like the strongest rebuttal, because like you have to account for that. You can't just not, unless you're saying like Pliny, like these records are all fake. I guess you could, you're just like, those are fake. Yeah. Mesopotamia is fake, it's fake and gay. No. Like anyways, so,
and clearly they might not have been good at math, so they couldn't be like, oh yeah, we could just say that we saw an eclipse on this day and write it down in a journal. No, they just weren't smart enough for that.
Yeah.
They just wanted to add the days and take them away, whatever.
Yeah. So another rebuttal, I did mention this when we were breaking down the transition from the Julian to Gregorian calendar, but the calculation was correct. So like they never, when they were doing this reformation, they never purported to bring the calendar in line with the Julian calendar as it existed at the time of its institution in 45 BC. But they instituted it as it existed in 325 AD. And this was, again, the Council of Nicaea, which was like the method they had at this council established the method for determining the date of Easter Sunday by fixing it to the vernal equinox on March 21st. In the Julian calendar. So when I was saying before, but then Herbie Ehrlich would just say, oh, that council never happened. But this is a rebuttal. They're like, no, the council did happen, and here's the evidence for the council. But he would just say, he's like, no, it didn't happen. But that is a piece of evidence that is a rebuttal.
Okay.
So they were aware of this. It's not like 300 years were missing. They're like, no, we're just going to start here. Another thing is too much history to fake. So this is just the simple fact. There's just like so many things. It's like, how would you possibly fake all of this? So we talked about Charlemagne. We talked about the Carolingian dynasty. They say that these are fabricated, but this would have been, you would have to fabricate so many other things. You'd have to fabricate the rest of the history in Europe. And then during the same era, like Anglo-Saxon England, the papacy, the Byzantine Empire. Also, there's other, like not even specific to Europe, you would have to fake the life of like Muhammad and the Islamic expansion into the areas of the former Western Roman Empire. Also including the conquest of the Visigothic Iberia. So there's like other things you would have to fake. You'd also have to reconcile the history with the Tang Dynasty of China and its contact with the Islamic world. An example that's given is the Battle of Talas. So there are other histories from other geographic locations that it's like, how would you fake that? Like,
yeah,
the archaeological evidence was found there. It's like you'd have to like go plant stuff. Like it just gets too crazy too fast. There's a guy named, this is a guy, I read his rebuttal against this. His name's Christoph Marcinkowski of the International Institute of Advanced Islamic Studies. He explained that Ehrlich has just a lack of understanding of Arabic history, and he suggested it's likely just to not knowing the language. Basically, what this guy is saying is, like, the Islamic Muslim histories also need to be accounted for. And he is not accounting for these things. So like at the same time of Charlemagne's reign, which Ehrlich says is a fairy tale, there's also the reign of Abbasid Caliph Harun al-Rashid around the same time. And it's like, well, how can there be this history of this if this is a fairy tale? Like this time did exist. And this also doesn't explain things like other places like we mentioned China, but like India and Persia, they would also have their own histories that would need to be accounted for. So I have a really great blurb here. This was from a post on Reddit I found. I really liked it. And to the claim that 300 years never happened and there's just nothing that happened there, this guy was like, he's like, nothing happened at all. If you don't count things like the Battle of Tours, 732, the Siege of Constantinople, Neapolis, 717 to 718, the Anlutian Rebellion, 755, 763, Charlemagne being crowned the Western Roman Empire, 801, the first recorded Viking raid in England, 793, in Lindisfarne, the overthrow of China's only ruling empress, 705, the invention of gunpowder, 808, the Byzantine-Bulgarian Wars, 809, 815, the start of the Rurik dynasty, 862, the Battle of Edington, 878, year one of the Islamic calendar, 622, the end of the Roman-Persian Wars, 627, the start of the Umayyad Caliphate, 661, the Arab siege of Constantinople, 674-678, the death of Muhammad the Prophet, 632, Emperor Leo III forcing the conversion of the Jews, 722, Japan losing one-third of their population to smallpox, 735-737, the Shia dynasty is established in Morocco, 789, Viking reached Paris by the Seine River, 845, Viking settle Iceland, 874, the assassination of the Tang dynasty's Xing Zong, 826, etc. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty solid.
yeah,
I guess nothing happened.
No, all those are fake. They just got the wrong date.
Yeah. So let's hop into final thoughts. So at the end of the day, for me, I really think this is a cool story. I like pressure points being placed on narratives. But I think this one, at least for me, the smoking gun against it is just the physics does a better job of explaining dates. And if you can't account for that, you can't account for it. It's like there's no possible way to fake that.
Yeah. I would just say, like, if you are looking at history with this lens of the time didn't exist, you're going to find evidence that kind of supports your claim. So the lack of wood records, the lack of innovation or developments. So you're going to find these narratives that kind of fit with what you're saying. And then you just choose to ignore all the other, like the history of other areas of the world or astronomical projections of time and stuff like that. So you just choose to ignore all that because you found something that fits your narrative.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I don't think we have to have a lengthy final thoughts here. I think, I don't know, it's entertaining. I like the idea of being like, hey, 300 years is fake. And like, how can I build a solid case? I just don't agree with the case. I don't think it's solid enough.
Yeah.
This is one I think we, I don't know, I'm in firm agreement with like the debunking of this one.
Yeah, it always becomes kind of dicey when somebody offers a rebuttal and you're like, well, that just didn't happen.
Yeah.
That's when it becomes like, okay, well, this is full of crap then.
Yeah.
You got to be able to back it up more than one way.
100%. Before we roll out of today's episode, we would like to give massive props and credits to our producer tier on Patreon. As always, thank you to Spurgalicious Asshat, David Cheesem, Big Ball Small Wiener, Batcat Meatloaf, Dirty Dangles, Velcro Shoe Guy, Tosh Collins, Andrew Johnson, Honest Elliot, Nikki Hansen, and Justin Ware for enabling today's episode and the continued growth of the show.
Before we fully roll out of the episode, be sure to go right now and sign up as a free member on Patreon so that you can vote on what topic we record at our next recording session. So signing up takes a minute or less than a minute, and it's completely free to do. So if you go on patreon.com/theswervepodcast and you press the big blue join for free button, you can create an account by entering an email and password, and then you have access to voting. It's completely free and just lets your voice be heard and makes your vote count. So when we are coming up with which topics we should do, make sure to vote so we can gauge the interest on these topics.
So just to say a little bit more about the topic voting, we release a poll of about 5 to 10 topics from our master bank of recommendations, and we drop the voting on the first of each month, and it's open for 2 weeks until the 15th. And basically, we'll record whatever the top thing is on that at our next recording session. So you should hurry and sign up so you can actually cast your vote before voting closes or before you miss the next drop. And this just really helps us direct the topics that people want to hear on the podcast. Having said that, we also offer 3 other paid tiers on Patreon if you would like to support the podcast financially and also receive some sick benefits. So the first is our $1 Ride the Wave tier, and this is where we drop an extra Patreon-exclusive episode every month in addition to the regular 2 episodes that we drop every month. You'll also get a shout-out on the podcast. And then we have a $3 Slap That Ass tier where you get early access on Sundays instead of our typical drop time of Wednesdays to all the main topic episode drops. We'll mail you out a Patreon-exclusive holographic sticker pack. And then lastly, we have a $10 producer tier where you'll be credited at the end of all of our main topic episodes, as well as receive a monthly special bonus Patreon exclusive episode. This special bonus episode, it's not the same as our topic episodes. It is a bonus episode we're doing for fun. Right now, we're doing the Connect the Dots series where we take our previous episodes, we output 12 of them at random, and then we try to connect the dots between them in any way we possibly can. And that's the show we're doing for our bonus series for now. So having said that, be sure to sign up for free and vote so you can help direct where the topics are going that we're researching and recording. And with that, thanks everybody for listening. Slap that ass.
And ride the wave. for 11 minutes?
11 minutes. It fucking matters. It fucking matters.
Only in the bedroom does it matter.
That's dude, 11 minutes. That's a long, dude. That's, what are you talking about? That's great.
Well, yeah, that's where the minutes matter. Not in a day.
Yeah, but you only need 11 of them. maybe 4 minutes. Like 11 minutes. It was fucking for 11 minutes. What are we talking about? Jesus
Phantom
Christ.
Time. Just gonna start adding phantom minutes to everything.
Yeah, it's like, no, this is a solid 58 minutes. It's like, this was 3 minutes.